Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio. Glad you could make it this Sunday, and we've got a great show for you lined up. We have some amazing guests. But first, let me tell you that our wonderful True Crime show is brought to you by the Doris Day Animal Foundation. Now, Doris Day, the actress, we all know her. I believe she's in her 90s now, 90, 91. Anyway, in the early 70s, she's walking around Beverly Hills, and even in Beverly Hills, there were unwanted animals. And Doris Day said, you know what, this is ridiculous. I have money. I'm going to do something. So she did. She was one of the first people to set up a nonprofit foundation with the sole intention of finding homes for homeless animals. So check out her website. It is all for a good cause. It's the Doris Day Animal Foundation.org. And do remember this, the opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. Don't get your true crime panties in a wad, my friend, if you get upset about something you hear, because we have no connection to websleuths.com LLC or forumsforjustice.org. Those are two separate entities all on their own. So you don't get mad at the forums if you hear something on this show. You come to me, Trisha, and we'll make you happy all over again. Now, later in the show, we're going to welcome David Hughes. You know him as Super Dave. He has a new book out. It's called An Angel Betrayed, How Wealth, Power, and Corruption Destroyed the JonBenet Ramsey Murder Investigation. But first off, let's welcome back our dear friend, Polly's dad, Mark Klass. Mark, welcome. Oh, you know what? You're on mute. I do this every time, and I keep forgetting. Hold on, Mark, just a minute. I'm sorry. You know, Mark, right before the show, you asked me if I did my own engineering. I think it's obvious that I do my own engineering.
I'm
sorry.
Yeah,
it is very obvious.
Cool.
That's my Thursday show. I have an engineer producer, and it always goes smoothly. This show, it's all me, and you never know what'll happen. Anyway, Mark, welcome. It's been a very busy time for you, I know. Let's talk about human trafficking. Now, the Class Kids Foundation, one of your goals is to stop human trafficking. And when I first heard of human trafficking, and I think a lot of people think this way, I think of something overseas and something just really too weird that never really happens. But that's not human trafficking, and there's a lot of it right here in the States. Why don't you explain what human trafficking is?
Well, I will, and in fact, you know, human trafficking has been an American legislative priority since 2001, when President Bush signed the original TVPA, Trafficking Victims Protection Act. And the scope of that particular legislation at that time was a global scope as opposed to a domestic scope. So basically what happened is that all of the organization or the agency that was put in control of human trafficking was the United States Department of State, which has a global mission. And as a result of that, almost all of the money allocated to human trafficking was allocated based on the assumption that the United States was a demand country for human trafficking, not a supply country, and that the supplying was going on in other countries throughout the world. So all of the nonprofit organizations that were able to take advantage of the Human Trafficking Protection Act were globally focused, and as a result, the first 7 or 8 years of the TVPA, this is through at least the second reauthorization, the focus was always a global focus, and we were really ignoring the fact that we're supplying much of our own demand here in the United States. And we're supplying that demand not so much in labor trafficking, but in sex trafficking. And
let me interrupt you for a moment, Mark. When you say sex trafficking, what exactly do you mean by that?
Prostitution.
Okay.
What I mean is when we're taking men and women, generally women, and forcing them to have sex with strangers against their will, we're talking about human sex trafficking.
And that's
human sex trafficking. The niche in the United States that we had ignored for so long is the sex trafficking of minors. So we're talking about kids under 18 years of age, kids who, per the definition of human trafficking, don't have, are unable to consent to having sex. Therefore, if they're having sex for money and they're being controlled by a pimp, then they are victims of human trafficking. And what we've discovered is that there are between maybe 1 and 300,000 American kids that are involved in human sex trafficking on a given day in the United States. And that these kids are not necessarily kids that are kidnapped, but kids that run away from home and
right.
find themselves to be a very small fish in a very large pond once they get out into the big world and realize that the problems they were running away from exist in the larger picture as well.
Well, they
so
find
it's
out
it's a very, very difficult problem.
It is. They find out
mm-hmm.
that, you know, they run away from home, and then they find out life on the street is a hell of a lot worse sometimes, and they get a pimp, and a pimp makes them feel good for a while and then beats the hell out of them and forces them into sex. That's human sex trafficking,
yeah.
and we see it on our streets. It's everywhere you go in America.
The way it can really evolve is these kids will find themselves on the big streets of American cities, and they will be, as you say, you know, without resources, without funds, a very small fish in a very big pond, and then some man generally will come up to them and ask them if they need some help. And they will be befriended, and they'll be fed, they'll be clothed, they'll be groomed. And after a certain point of time, it could be anywhere from days to weeks, I suppose, they are then told that their job now is to get out on the streets and to sell themselves. And when that happens, 100% of the proceeds go back to the pimp. The
right.
money does not go. The money does not go to the girls themselves, the girls or boys themselves.
And it does happen.
So
to
yeah, it's a terrible
boys.
Problem.
It is. And one
now,
thing that I'm not quite sure. He's the director of your search operations. I was trying to give him a title. Brad Dennis. One thing
Brad,
that he has worked on is literally rescuing teenagers from this horrible trap that they've found themselves in. Can you tell us a little bit about what Brad does and perhaps what you have done in the past to help end this trafficking?
Sure. Well, I mean, Brad really brought this to our attention through his work with the Florida Coalition for Human Trafficking back in the early part of this century, I'd say 2005 on. And we really started to get serious about it as a foundation in 2007. We facilitated some seminars. We educated ourselves. We talked to as many people as we could about this issue, and we're really one of the first organizations in the United States to bring it to the attention of people that we are dealing with a very real problem within our own borders, and that we need to rethink the allocation of funds to assist in this effort because we're ignoring this problem with the youth of America, these kids that find themselves trapped in the scourge of human trafficking. And Brad has run a variety of outreach programs, generally in the northern Florida area, the panhandle area where he works, and they work with other organizations. Basically what he's done is he's put together a group called the Pauley Center, and it's a lot of different disciplines. It's doctors, it's lawyers, it's officers of the court, it's law enforcement, it's health practitioners. It's a variety of people that can assist once a child is brought in from the streets. And it's a very, very difficult situation. It's not anywhere near as easy as it might sound, because oftentimes the girls run back to the pimps.
Right.
They're
they go
so
right
conditioned,
back.
They're so conditioned, they go right back, or they know the alternative of going home is offering nothing better than they're involved in, you know, currently. So it's very, very difficult for them. Now, back in 2009, the Class Kids Foundation and the Florida Coalition Against Human Trafficking started their first Tackle the Traffickers program at the Tampa Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And we've been involved in human trafficking at the Super Bowl ever since. I think we recently finished our sixth program.
When you say
can I
interrupt you 1 second? When you say you're human trafficking at the Super Bowl, I don't know what that means. Explain a little bit more.
I'd be happy to. Human trafficking at the Super Bowl represents large numbers of men with disposable income for some concentrated period of time. So it can be a Super Bowl, it can be a political convention, it can be any kind of a convention, it can be the World Series, it can be the NBA Finals. You get men with money and time on their hands, and some of them, and certainly not all of them by any means, and I would say it's a small minority of these individuals, are going to behave badly. And one of the ways they behave badly is to seek out prostitutes. And a lot of these guys feel that, you know, they would prefer to have a younger prostitute because it you're not as likely to catch a disease from a young prostitute as an older prostitute. I think, unfortunately, that's kind of what it comes down to. So we've been focusing our efforts on the Super Bowl just as an example of the kinds of challenges that these kids that find themselves in this situation face on a regular basis. And listen, we've come under criticism for this. There's
Why?
No question about it. For instance, the Polaris Project says that human trafficking is an everyday problem. It's not just a one-day-a-year problem. And, mm-hmm. of course, our response is we understand that, but we're using this one day a year to bring a focus on the problem so that people will be aware of it, will understand what it's about, will be paying attention to it, and will hopefully get some kind of an emotional investment in it so that we can then start addressing the problems of eliminating the scourge of human trafficking within our own borders. So that's why we work on the Super Bowl. And
so I'm sorry, I don't mean to keep interrupting you, but
I
things fly over my head here all the time. It's like an airport going right over my head constantly.
No, you want to know what I'm talking about.
You do. Yes, I do. Absolutely. So when you say you work the Super Bowl, what do you do?
Sure. We work with a coalition of other organizations, or we have in the past, that have a variety of functions. Some of the groups go out into the community in the week prior to the Super Bowl. They go out into the communities around where the Super Bowl is going to be and focus on low-rent motels, basically, and mm-hmm. talk to the proprietors of those motels and tell them that, you know, this is something they need to be on the lookout for, understanding that these proprietors have kids of their own, obviously, and that, you know, if men come in with these girls, and this is probably... You know what's going on, and then giving these folks a list of kids that we feel might be endangered. There's other groups of people that go into the schools in and around the Super Bowl and educate the students and the faculty about what's going on with this issue. And what we do specifically as the Class Kids Foundation, as we do deep research on the internet, on pages like Redbook and Backpage, and start monitoring those pages in the month prior to the Super Bowl to see if there's any dramatic changes in the activity. And indeed, what we find is that the prostitution sites have a tenfold increase in activity in the days leading up to the Super Bowl itself. And then what we do is we pass this information on to law enforcement. Specifically in the last Super Bowl up in New Jersey, we were working with the New Jersey State Police and the FBI.
Really?
And apparently Brad's folks are able to do this research better than even the FBI is.
Wow.
Sometimes because of certain restrictions they have, constitutional restrictions. And as a result, we've created this partnership, and we'll be working together with them again next year in Phoenix, Arizona. So, like I said, we come under criticism for the work that we do in human trafficking, but the reality is that it is raising awareness. It is rescuing kids. For instance, at the last Super Bowl, 23 kids were rescued and 45 pimps were arrested.
That's great.
In the big picture of things, that might not be a big deal, but it's a big deal to get some of these pimps off the street. They should all be off the street, and it's a big deal getting some of these kids rescued. And it's really a big deal bringing this to the attention of the American public through the media, even
if
it is only on this one day a year. That's what we intended to do. That's what's happening, and I think that, you know, we've proven some success on that. And quite frankly, Trish, I want to tell you, at our foundation, we're going to start increasing our focus on search and rescue and human trafficking.
That's great.
Simply because these are the issues of the day, and people need people like Class Kids to come and help them search for their missing loved ones. And quite frankly, we have knowledge now to be able to go out and be effective in the human trafficking realm as well.
I'm going to play devil's advocate just a moment here, okay? I don't think there's anybody on the planet that would say prostitution with juveniles is good. No, it's horrible. That absolutely needs to stop. But what do you say to the people who say, look, Mark Class and Brad Dennis and everybody else, I'm going out with an adult woman. She's choosing this to do on her own. I give her a little money. We have a little fun. And we go on our way. What's the harm? Why are you trying to stop me?
Well, I'm not trying to stop you. I would counsel you to use protection. But if you're an adult and your partner is an adult, then that is absolutely nobody's business but your own. I really have no problem with that. I have no opinion of that, and I have no problem with that at all. Our focus is solely on underage girls that, for whatever reason, have been forced into the world of prostitution and are being exploited in very large numbers at very large venues like the Super Bowl.
Very good. I wanted to make sure we cleared that up. And it's, again, Mark, I was one of those naive people that when I heard the term human trafficking, I assumed we're talking, you know, the Middle East or Asia or somewhere where it just didn't affect us.
Sure.
But when you think about it, I want everybody, when you go down the street and you see a young woman, a young girl who's dressed up and she's got that hooker thing going, that's human trafficking right there. And they're usually hooked on drugs. It's a horrible situation for all of them. That's not one good thing for them, no matter what.
No. And sometimes it's trading one hell for another, quite frankly. And that's what makes this problem so much more difficult as well, because you can't just bring these kids in and return them to home. They left home for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes you have to find long-term solutions for these kids. You need to find somebody that will give them a bed for 6 months to a year. You need to get them psychological assistance. You need to get them medical assistance so that they can be treated for STDs and whatever else they might have picked up on the street. You need to give them job training. I mean, seriously, you need to give them education. You need to do the things for these kids that oftentimes nobody has ever done for them.
And
oftentimes kids can't even appreciate that and, you know, rebel against it. It's heartbreaking.
Absolutely.
On every level.
It is. And you bring up a great point, Mark, about the psychological help that these children need, because let me tell you something. We're going to pay for this one way or another, my friends. If we bring them in off the street and then just expect them to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, not going to happen. They're going to go back out and commit more crime. We will pay eventually, whether it's because they go to prison, because they're a drug addict and they rob people. We will pay. So let's put a little money into it now and get these kids off the street, fix them while they're still young as much as we can, and then prevent the long-term problem of having another prison cell that we have to upkeep and keep them fed and clothed because we didn't want to take the time out when they were 13 to help them out. I just don't understand why people have a problem when they look at this. They think it's quote unquote a social program, and we're helping deadbeats, and that's not the case at all. You're helping children.
Here's the problem, though. Here's the problem, though, Trish. And I mean, oftentimes law enforcement doesn't want to get involved. I mean, you know, their whole throwback position on missing kids is if they're a runaway, then that's not our problem. That's a family problem.
That's
so, you know, you find those kinds of situations, you find other kinds of situations. And I'll give you a perfect example. A couple of years ago, the very famous New York Jets linebacker Lawrence Taylor, who has since retired from football and was known to be, you know, the baddest ass on a football defense anywhere, hired a prostitute from a motel near metropolitan New York, somewhere right over the border in Connecticut. And a pimp delivered a prostitute to him. Once the business was conducted and this pimp took this girl back into New York, she escaped. And she called her uncle. Her uncle called the authorities, and it turned out, indeed, that this was a 16-year-old girl, that the person that had taken her there had a manslaughter conviction against him, and the person that she was taken to was, you know, the meanest dude in professional football during his tenure in the league. And through the whole ordeal, as it played out in the press, they continued to call Taylor Mr. Taylor. They certainly did denigrate the pimp because, I mean, on nobody's radar is this guy a good guy. But they continued to call this 16-year-old girl a prostitute. And she's not a prostitute. Quite frankly, she escaped. She didn't want anything to do with it. She is a victim of human trafficking. Yet not once during the whole time that this thing played out on television did I ever hear anybody refer to this young girl as a victim of human trafficking. Until it was concluded, through the trial, through the plea bargain, they continued to call her a prostitute. So,
that's awful.
You know, that's just one example of the things that we're up against as we tried to deal with this very real issue. And you know what? That girl deserves a chance. As does every 13, 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old child that finds themselves in this situation. We shouldn't give up on them. Maybe their parents have. Maybe they're being exploited by somebody. But they're still human beings. They still deserve a chance. And we need people out there to, you know, offer the kinds of services that are available, that need to be available to them, so that they can have a chance in life.
Absolutely. And what you and Brad Dennis and the Class Kids Foundation, what you're doing is to be applauded, and I hope we can get the word out and help you get the word out and get some help, because you can always use volunteers, right? You can go to the Class Kids, classkids.org.
Sure, we can use, that's absolutely correct, at classkids.org. We can use volunteers, and quite frankly, I think we're pioneers.
I think we're
looking at this differently than other people are looking at it, and I think we're affecting it more than some of the people that are making huge sums of money from the government to affect it. You know, we get no government funding whatsoever, but we've taken an issue and made it a big deal at least one time a year, whereas nobody else has.
Exactly.
I told you that the Polaris Project criticized us for the way we deal with this thing, and the Polaris Project is like one of the number one anti-trafficking nonprofit organizations in the United States. They get huge sums of money every year from the federal government. And quite frankly, as they were criticizing us during the Super Bowl, they were playing, they had billboards for themselves up in Times Square.
Oh, brother.
They're promoting themselves, and we're out there doing the fight, and we're the ones that are being criticized for it.
You know what?
Oh, well.
Sometimes there's just no explaining people and what they do. You just got to shrug your shoulders and go, what the hell? Mark, we're going to talk a little briefly here. Yeah, exactly. We're going to talk briefly here about that horrible kidnapping in Nigeria. And then I do want to ask you about Sierra Lamar. And then I know you have to go. But this, what has happened in Nigeria is so horrendous. And the good thing is it's got the world in an uproar. The bad thing is I don't even know what to do. I'm in an uproar, but I'm just sitting here. Based on your experience and what you know and what Brad knows, what do you think is going to happen to the girls? And give us your thoughts on this whole tragic event of the kidnapping of close to 300 schoolgirls.
Yeah, it's not tragic yet because we don't know how this thing is going to play out. But obviously, you know, this is something that was totally and completely fueled through social media. This is about Twitter and Facebook. This is really about Twitter. Bring our girls home, hashtag bring our girls home, has now been tweeted something like a billion times. And it took 3 weeks for the world to become aware of this problem. And what we've realized is that not everybody holds to the same kind of moral codes as the United States or our partners now in Nigeria, the French, the British, or the Chinese, that the Nigerians themselves couldn't have cared less about these girls. And that if it hadn't been for the outrage of the parents and those people that supported the parents, nobody ever would have known that 300 girls had been stolen by Islamic militants in Nigeria itself. So I think the best chance these kids have ever had is Twitter. I mean, that's the thing that's really going to save these girls, if anything does. Because now we have advisors in Nigeria, as do our partners have advisors in Nigeria, and the Nigerian government is actually paying attention for the first time to this issue, and it looks like they will make efforts to bring the girls home. Now, the Boko Haram, the militants that took the girls, are now talking about the conditional release of at least half of the girls for certain prisoners, not the leaders that are in prison, but for certain political prisoners that belong to that organization. And I don't know what kind of a negotiation that is going to be, but I have to think that behind the scenes there are drones flying everywhere, there are spies everywhere, everybody's doing their best to try to figure out where these girls are, and that there is a SEAL team somewhere being trained to go in and do a mass rescue of these young girls.
Let's hope that's what happens.
I think that the last thing that I would want, if I was a terrorist of any kind, is to think that a SEAL team might be working to come and get me.
trying to look me up, right? Exactly.
Trying to look me up.
And you're right about the Twitter and the social media. This is, I think, one of the first cases that the social media has really played the part in getting the pressure on this government. Because you're right, this good luck Jonathan president, you know, it doesn't do anything. In fact, they're talking about his ouster now. They probably will kick him out of there, but I don't know if they can find anybody better. That's the problem with a country like Nigeria. But the good news is the pressure now, and if I was a terrorist group, I wouldn't want the whole world looking at me and trying to find me. You know, add to that a SEAL team out there trying to, you know, take their heads. So we can only
hope.
I don't know that that's happening.
I just assume that it is, though.
Let's put it this way. For God's sakes, I hope that's, you know, what they're doing. I'm sure the SEALs would love to be doing it, but let's hope that our government is offering that type of help, because we certainly have it, and so do our allies. So let's hope that there's something like that going on.
Our president has two young girls. He has daughters. He can completely and totally relate to this. I would be stunned if he hadn't offered all kinds of covert assistance in this case.
Yes, and that's what we need is the good guys to go in and get these young girls out. It just seems that these terrorist groups have a real problem with girls getting an education. And that's a whole other show that we need to talk about, because it's like, educating women is what needs to be done to make the place a better place, you know, not keeping them locked up in a suit that looks like a beekeeper, for God's sakes. Okay, Mark Class, one quick question here, and then I know you have to run. Sierra Lamar, what's going on with her, the guy that they've arrested? And the search continues for Sierra. Tell us what's happening.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things happening. As you know, the Antoine Garcia Torres has been in jail, for almost 2 years now. He was formally indicted about 3 or 4 months ago by a grand jury. He has pled not guilty to all of the charges, which include the murder of Sierra and the kidnapping of Sierra. The search continues for Sierra. Violet and I were just down there a couple of weeks ago, and they're still getting a good 20 to 25 searchers. They're getting a good, strong two teams of searchers to come out every week to continue to look for the girl. The problem is, of course, that you're not looking toward the same thing now that you were looking for when Sierra disappeared.
2 years ago,
now
right.
Now you're looking for bone fragments, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's tragic.
You're still looking for shallow graves, obviously, but you're looking for bone fragments. You're not looking for a vibrant girl running through the fields waiting to get saved. Mm-hmm. And another real challenge that exists now is that after 2 years of intensive search, that it's hard to come up with viable new search areas or even sometimes reasons to go back to old search areas because they've been searched time and time and time again. But the searchers and those people that are supporting the family continue to remain optimistic. They continue to show up every weekend to look for this girl, and they continue to have our tacit support.
Well, and that is a good thing because I've been to the Sierra Lamar Search Center, and it is a truly incredible place. Sierra's family and friends and that whole community has rallied around Sierra, and like you said, continue to do so. And that has a lot to do with Mark Klass and the Klass Kids Foundation, all the work that you have done as well. Mark, give my love to Violet and to everybody, and ClassKids.org, that's where you need to go. They are a 501(c)(3) charity, so they survive on donations. It's always, the money goes to a great cause. That's ClassKids.org. Mark, you take care and be safe out there, okay?
Can I say one more thing?
Oh, absolutely.
We recently, just last week, in fact, completed the transition of our website from a HTML website to a WordPress website, which means several things. But the most important thing it means, I think, as it applies to your audience, is that we now have Google Translator on our website.
Oh,
and
great.
You can go to the Google Translator and immediately, our default language is Spanish, you can immediately, anybody can get all of our content in perfect Spanish now. So we've taken down our Spanish language website, which was an independent website, and we've substituted Google Translator onto our main website. And I think that that's a pretty significant improvement for us.
Absolutely, because you are a worldwide organization, so now everybody can come on and read and get your message. So good, that's good news, Mark. That is good news. And Mark, if you ever need anything from us, you know we're here for you. Just give us a call, and we'll be right there with whatever you need, okay?
I know that, Trish. It's always a pleasure, sweetheart.
Take care. Talk to you soon.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Mark Klass, everybody, from the Klass Kids Foundation. Truly a... I can't say enough good about the man. He and his wife, Violet, work so hard. Violet, his wife, works behind the scenes like nobody else I've ever seen. I always keep telling her I need to find a wife like Violet. She is really a whiz, an organizational genius, if you will, something that helps a lot when you're working with the Klass Kids Foundation and having to keep track of everything. Okay, we're going to switch gears now, and this is the case that brought me to the Internet. Brought me to owning forumsforjustice.org, brought me to Web Sleuths, one of the reasons I decided to buy Web Sleuths, which I am now the proud co-owner of, and that is the JonBenet Ramsey case. And believe it or not, it is still very active. I was very disheartened to see on a tabloid this week some sort of headline that said, this man killed JonBenet Ramsey, and it's some guy. I don't even know the story. I don't want to know the story. Because the fact is, they haven't been able to clear the people in the house. Don't believe it when you hear people like Aaron Moriarty on 48 Hours or anybody else say, DNA cleared the parents in the JonBenet Ramsey case. That's a bunch of crap. That was Mary Lacey's mentally ill brain coming up with that baloney and clearing the parents on a half of a degraded skin cell that didn't match them. You know, don't even get me started about her, about Mary Lacey, that she was the prosecutor, the district attorney, I should say, that came out and cleared the parents out of the blue without talking to the police or agreeing with the police or anything. And certainly her successor, Stan Garnett, has come back and basically said, no, nobody is cleared. So you don't ever hear that part. Well, a lot of people have been interested in this case. You know, thousands and thousands of, for a while it was millions and millions. Now it's down to thousands and thousands. And still very dedicated people discussing the JonBenet Ramsey case because, There's always something new to discuss, believe it or not. Even though this happened at the end of 1996, there's lots to discuss. And somebody that we all know, his name, we know him as Super Dave. Well, for years, Super Dave has been threatening to write a book. And we've been waiting for it and waiting for it, and it is well worth the wait, my friends. Now, I love the title of this book, okay? It's kind of big, but it's well worth it. It's called An Angel Betrayed, How Wealth, Power, and the Corruption and Corruption Destroyed the JonBenet Ramp. Okay, I'm going to start over here. Blah, 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 blah. An Angel Betrayed, How Wealth, Power, and Corruption Destroyed the JonBenet Ramsey Murder Investigation. And everybody, let's welcome first-time author and Super Dave on the forums, David Hughes. Hi, David, are you there? Whoops, I got the wrong one. Hold on. Where'd he go? Hold on. There we are. David, are you there?
I am.
How are you, my dear?
Well, you know how it is. How many people get a dream that actually becomes reality?
There you go. Not too many people. And you know what? But it's not so much your dream as it was a lot of hard work, too. I mean, you put a lot into this book, but let's back up a little bit, okay?
Five years worth. Anyone wants to know.
I'm sure it was an intense 5 years. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit, before we get into the inside of the book, I want to talk about the book process. You can go on Amazon and get it. You also have your own website. And you have, it looks like it's been published by Random House. But it was something that you self-published. How do you go about doing that? Let's talk about the workings of putting a book like this together.
Okay. Well, like I said, it took about 5 years to get from finally deciding that I was going to do it, and I had toyed with the idea for a while, to the finished product. And it worked like this. Once I had it written out in a way that I was satisfied with, and that took an awful lot of research and a long time to do, because I'm kind of a perfectionist about these things. I mean, mm-hmm. You jump into something like that, you want to get it right the first time.
Sure.
Once that was done, the question for a first-time author who has really no idea about these things then becomes, who is going to help put it out there for you?
Mm-hmm.
And the way this worked out was, I kind of took a leap of faith. I didn't take the first offer that came along, but when I found one, this strategic book publishing and rights agency that it's been released through, I went with it because, mm-hmm. if no other reason, they gave me the best deal for a publishing contract that I could find.
Now, when you say best deal, what do you mean by that?
The least amount of cost for the greatest amount of
exposure and help?
Yeah. It had a marketing device built right in, as you're no doubt aware of by now.
Right. And so you were able to find this group. And that's what's so beautiful about the Internet now is you can follow your dream and get it done. And, you know, I can come on and talk about true crime. I've always wanted my own true crime show. You've always wanted to write a book. And here we are both achieving our dream because of the Internet. How's the response to the book been so far?
Well, it's got a few reviews on Amazon. I know about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so much of an egotist that I'll search the Internet every day looking for what people have said about it.
Mm-hmm.
But on the whole, it's been completely positive.
Good. Good. And I don't know if you have a number or what, but is it selling better than you thought, or is it slow, or?
I really couldn't say for sure. The publishing mm-hmm. company keeps track of these things, and with what I've been going through lately, I haven't had a chance to check up with them. But I will say that a lot of times when I go on to Amazon, they'll say, we've only got such and such left. Hurry and get yours.
Oh, good. That's a good sign. That's a very good sign. Okay, let's talk about the book itself. And I love this title because the title explains everything, basically. An Angel Betrayed, How Wealth, Power, and Corruption Destroyed the JonBenet Ramsey Murder Investigation. Okay, let's talk about the book. You say basically this is a book for pretty much everybody. You wanted to make it a book that if you didn't really know much about the case, you just picked it up and you were able to find out about it. Is that what you were going for?
Absolutely. The way I figured it is, from my experience working with web sleuths and all the other forums, it's one thing to market to people who actually know a little bit about this, regardless of what side they might be on. But most people who don't have much of an idea about this case, except maybe what they might have read, scanning through a magazine rack or something, or generally people who have, if any, knowledge of forensic science, probably from half-baked television shows.
Right.
The idea here was I was writing for an audience of regular people. This is something that was bluntly straightforward.
Just regular people. So if somebody doesn't know much about the case, they can pick it up and they can understand what's going on. Because let's face it, there are so many twists and turns in this case. I have forgotten a lot of things that have happened. But you put it down and you put it in the book in a way that makes it easy for everybody to read. And I think it's a very interesting read from what I have read so far for people that know a lot about the case, because you're reminded of so much that has happened. We're talking with David Hughes, and David, we know him as Super Dave, has written a book about the JonBenet Ramsey case. It is available on Amazon, and Angel Betrayed, How Wealth, Power, and Corruption Destroyed the JonBenet Ramsey Murder Investigation. Super Dave is our buddy on Web Sleuths. He's been there for years, and we love him. Dave, does it surprise you that people still think there's an intruder and how they come up with the intruder theory? I feel that there is a point where I can't explain any clearer how there isn't an intruder, and I've just got to shrug my shoulders and say, whatever. Don't you feel that frustration, too?
Frustration, yes, but I wouldn't exactly say surprise. I mean, frustration, disappointment, those are certainly words that have come to my mind, if nothing else than my conversations with people in my personal life. But I can't say that I'm surprised because, if you look back on history, I believe it was Joseph Goebbels, the Nazi propaganda minister, who said that if you tell a lie often enough, people will accept it as truth.
Exactly. And that's the one thing that we see happen on the forums all the time, where somebody puts a rumor down as a fact, and before you know it, boom, it's fact, and it's part of the discussion for years to come, and it is nothing but a fantasy. So it still surprises me, though, that people are able to look at this and go, hey, there was an intruder there, definitely. We also have had another author on this show quite a bit. He was the former police, well, he's not the former police chief, he is the chief police of Telluride, and he was the former lead investigator for Mary Lacey, the Boulder district attorney, and he was the investigator for the JonBenet Ramsey case. That's James Kohler. What did you think of his book?
You know, he came out with stuff that I had never even heard of, and that's saying something, because you know how strongly I've been with this one. Looking back on it, though, I shouldn't say that's all that surprising, because this is a man who, well, let's take it back just in case our listeners aren't aware of it. James Kohler was hired on as an investigator by the aforementioned Mary Lacey. Super Dave grits his teeth off camera. and if you remember, he was actually dismissed from his position after, I think it was only 3 weeks or something, because he would not go along with her program.
Right.
But apparently that was long enough for him to acquire all of this information, which just goes to show that, a good prosecutor does not ask a question that they don't already know the answer to.
Yes.
But then again, I don't think she was in office, a little over 8 years? I don't think Mary Lacey ever took a I don't think Mary Lacey ever took a case to trial in that entire time she was the district attorney.
No, I don't think she did.
So I guess she wouldn't know about all that.
Right. Well, I mean, there were cases, I think, they went to trial, but she never took any, and I don't think they ever I shouldn't say, because I don't know. I'd have to look it up. One of the facts I have forgotten about Boulder, believe me, but there's so, there, oh my gosh, we don't even know where to begin. If you're just joining us and you don't know what case we're talking about the JonBenet Ramsey case, and if you're not familiar with the case and you believe what you have heard from the mainstream media, don't. Here are facts. Fact number one. Nobody has been cleared. Fact number two, nobody that was in that house that night that JonBenet was killed has been cleared. Fact number three, Fleet White and his family, they've been cleared. Anybody else is not a suspect because they have yet to clear the people that were in the house that night. There is no evidence of an intruder, no matter what anybody says. That's a hardcore fact. There is no evidence of an intruder. There is a 2.5-page ransom note that looked exactly like Patsy Ramsey's handwriting. That's another fact, and we can just go on and on and on. But, Dave, in your opinion, you followed this. Well, first of all, I want to find out, how did you get started interested in the JonBenet Ramsey case? What brought you to this place, to where you are right now?
You know, I've been with this on day one. Yeah, I remember the first time that I ever even saw her face on the television. This was right after it happened. And for reasons that I still really don't understand to this very day, it was like an intense gravitational pull. It just sucked me right in.
Mm-hmm.
I should point out that in those days I had a much different view of things than I do now.
What did you think?
I went right along with what the Ramseys were putting out there. You know, I saw their, I think it was New Year's Day, that bit that they did.
Oh, yeah. Boy, who could forget that?
And,
right.
Oh, yeah. I can't forget to this day. And I got to tell you, not John so much, but Patsy, she really did a number on everybody. She did a number on me. And I want to clear something up here, and I make it clear in the book. I did not, well, let's put it this way. Part of the reason that I come so passionately in the book, and you can attest to that, anyone who's read it, is that I'm not a fool, and I don't like being fooled. And Patsy just kind of snuck under my radar, and that really, you know what, me off.
Yeah, well, you were pissed off. We can say that. This is adult radio.
Well, it
here.
Did.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it did.
I believe me. I know the feeling. Although I was never fooled, I always thought the parents had done something. Patsy was wonky to me from the very beginning. Wonky is an official word. You can look it up in the dictionary. People look wonky. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about where you stand now. Now the book. Tell us how the book starts out. What's on page one? That's what I always find fascinating. How do you grab the reader?
Ah, the introduction, you mean?
Yes.
Well, fortunately, I've got it right in front of me.
All right, let's hear it.
The first pair. Pardon?
I said go right ahead.
Okay, I'll give you the pertinent stuff. As quote. The story of JonBenet Ramsey's life is one we've all seen on those primetime cable crime shows and read in all those supermarket rag magazines. A stunningly beautiful little girl, a beauty queen at 6 years old, she was, as described by all who knew her, as charming, smart, and trusting. Away from the pageant scene, JonBenet was an adorable little scamp who liked to go barefoot because she, quote, wanted to feel the earth beneath her feet, unquote. She once asked if roses knew that their thorns hurt. She couldn't believe that anything beautiful could cause pain. She was born on August 6, 1990. She had everything going for her. Her father, John Bennett Ramsey, was a major executive for Access Graphics Incorporated, a branch of the famous Lockheed Aircraft Company. Her mom, Patricia Ann Paul Ramsey, that's Patsy's full name, anyone who doesn't know, known to her many friends as Patsy, had been a beauty pageant queen from her childhood days growing up in West Virginia. JonBenet seemed not just following in her mother's footsteps, but outshining her. JonBenet had an older brother named Burke as well. He'd been so close to her since she was born, it seemed like nothing could break them up. On the day after Christmas, 1996, the world changed. JonBenet was killed, and to this day, her killer has not been arrested. This book seeks to answer the big questions. Why was she killed? Who killed her? Why haven't they been punished? Is there any hope for this case? This book was not written by an insider from the case. It was not written by a legal professional. It was written by a dedicated internet crime hound who is sick and tired of year after year of injustice. It will show you how I went from being one of the biggest supporters of the Ramsey family to being one of their detractors. How the change happened to me is a story in and of itself, one you will hear and see for yourself as you continue with this book, for I intend to walk you through the evidence as I see it. I warn you, should you choose to continue, you will undoubtedly read things that will be upsetting. You will be reading the facts as I know them to be and my opinions and speculations along the way. I think you will have moments where you will be sickened. More than likely, you will become angry. It may very well shock you. However, to stay silent is to take part in a travesty. I can stay silent no longer. You've read the stories, heard the talking heads, and watched the video. Now you will hear the truth.
I love it. I love it. That is absolutely perfect. What do you think is the biggest piece of evidence that show? Oh, first of all, I'm going way ahead of myself here. My brain is tripping over my lips. Do you have an opinion on who you think did the actual killing?
I do indeed.
Okay, you don't need to tell me.
I
said you don't need to tell me. I just wanted to know if you have that conclusion in the book. And you devote a what, did you say?
Chapter 3 is entirely devoted to that.
Okay. What do you think is the biggest piece of evidence that proves there wasn't an intruder, and why?
Well, you have to understand from my perspective, I'm old school when it comes to criminal investigations, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not the kind of guy who necessarily looks for any one single smoking gun. I look at evidence as like pieces of a puzzle. You put them together until a picture forms. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's not just one thing, it's the combination of everything. But that said, I'd have to say that, and I actually devoted the following chapter, number 4, to this. What sets it in concrete for me was the findings by the various experts and pathologists that JonBenet had been the victim of, well, this is an adult rated show.
Yes.
So,
prolonged sexual abuse. Mm-hmm.
Pardon?
Yeah, and that to me is shocking. That to me is just shocking, and how people can't see that the quote unquote intruder just didn't molest her that night. It was, you know, prolonged. It's been going on for who knows how long, and that is a whole other book. I mean, we could take bits and pieces of this case and write a whole book on it, and I think we could have plenty left over to talk about. We're talking with David Hughes, also known as Super Dave. He has a new book out called An Angel Betrayed, How Wealth, Power, and Corruption Destroyed the JonBenet Ramsey Murder Investigation. Steve Thomas was the lead investigator of the case. He quit and wrote a book, and I remember that book came out. I was literally at the door at Barnes & Noble the day it opened, and or the time it opened, and went in and to get a copy. What did you think of Steve's book at the time? It's different now because we know so much more, but what did you think of Steve Thomas's book?
Well, it's a funny thing because I actually didn't read it until mm-hmm. right around 2002 when my switch from being in the Ramsey's corner to being, well, I don't want to say against them, but there's really no mm-hmm. other phrase I can come up with.
Right.
And I was just, like, re-examining everything. And so mm-hmm. I decided to give that one a shot.
And then you read it. What did you think?
I thought that this was a man who is sort of a dying breed. He's a man who knows what's right and what's wrong. And to me, some people try to shade that into too many gray areas when it's just not. I'm a man who believes that some things are absolute. There is right, there is wrong, there is black, there is white. I'm not talking in terms of the races now, just metaphorically.
Right. Well, yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of black and white in this case. We'll try to shade as gray, and that's just absolutely not the way it is.
Before we go on, might I say something else? You mentioned Fleet White being cleared earlier. And if there's one thing, looking back on it, that I probably could have done better in the book is that I really don't devote any time to the White family. They're mentioned, but reading this book, you really wouldn't know what the White family has gone through because of this case. More specifically, and some of our friends at Web Sleuths will know what I'm talking about, the trouble he went through with this kook who was making all sorts of false accusations.
Mystery woman, yes. Let me.
Right.
I can do this. I've talked about this so much, I can do it in a nutshell. I can do a Reader's Digest version. Basically, there was a woman who came forward and said that Fleet White was a head of a child pornography ring, and she had proof, Alex Hunter, and I think it was somebody, one of the newspapers, I don't want to say the wrong one, I think it was the Daily Camera, gave this girl credence, gave her a platform. Alex Hunter took it seriously and did a thorough investigation. In reality, anybody that looked at what she was saying knew she was crazy. I think she was put up for it. And when the police interviews by, her name is Nancy Krebs, were finally released, she also accused Fleet White's friend, quote-unquote, John. So she accused John Ramsey, too, but they leave that part out. Anyway, they put the Whites through hell. They acted like when this woman came forward, she had concrete evidence, and that's how they treated Fleet White, when in reality, she had been somebody that had made false claims before against people. She was just nuts. And it really put the Whites through a living hell, and they're still fighting it this day. In fact, if you go to websleuths.com or forumsforjustice.org and go to the JonBenet Ramsey case, you will see some new information provided by the White family, and I can't even get into all of it right now because it's very long, but it is anything but tedious. It's very, very interesting. So the Whites have been through hell and back. Now, Fleet White was with John Ramsey when John, quote-unquote, discovered her body, and Fleet White was John's best friend. Well, they ceased being friends, and John turned on his best friend and accused him of being possibly the one that killed her. And Fleet White has yet to speak out about what actually he saw that night, except to the grand jury. And maybe someday he'll tell, maybe he won't, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, I've spoken to him several times. I've actually met with him once, and I hold him in high regard, very truthful, very honest, someone who is waiting for the right thing to be done, and it just won't happen. So he recently told me that he wasn't going to stay silent anymore, and some things were going to happen, and we'd have to wait and see. So I'm anxious to see what that is, what's going to happen there. But, Dave,
and,
what do you think?
Go ahead. And to that end, it was because I had just found out about that I decided to mention that now. Because, you know, false accusations, especially of that kind, you said it, put a person through hell.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder how anybody who supposedly has any sense could believe in something like that.
Right. And she was just, well, the thing was, the stuff she was saying was just ridiculous. There was no truth to it, no foundation, absolutely no proof. And here you come along, you have the number one, your star witness in this case, and the Fleet White was the star witness. You know, he was with John Ramsey when he discovered JonBenet. You would think that Alex Hunter, who was then the Boulder District Attorney, would treat Fleet White like a king, would be decent to him. Instead, because he went against John Ramsey, because Fleet White, you know, had the gall to not go fall in line with the Ramsey camp and with the district attorney, they treated they used to call her Mystery Woman. Her name is Nancy Krebs. They treated her like she just showed them, a video of the thing. That's how they were. It was just so awful. And if you go to forumsforjustice.org, we even have a whole forum dedicated to all this crap about the Krebs info and everything.
If I might
interrupt. Please.
I've got to switch to a different phone. This one's running out of power.
Oh, dear. Well, we're almost... Okay, go ahead. We're almost done here. I could ramble on like a lunatic about the JonBenet Ramsey case forever and ever, because so much has happened, and there is so much that still could be done that isn't being done, and that's what's so frustrating. Everybody is, I shouldn't say everybody, but there are people who are afraid of the Ramsey attorney, Lynn Wood, and here's the interesting
thing.
Yeah, well, me either. Here's the interesting thing I want to point out about James Kohler's book that we spoke of earlier. Every time anybody mentioned anything about Burke, Lynn Wood would threaten to sue or would sue. Kohler has yet to hear a word from Lynn Wood. It's been over a year. Now, what does that tell you? What scares a defense attorney more than anything about their client? And that's the truth. And you want to see the truth go away. Lynn Wood, I mean, you should read, if you read Kohler's book, he says some horrible things about the family, and they're true. But you don't see Lynn Wood doing anything about it. Or your book, Dave, you haven't heard anything from him. And
no,
the thing is, it's the truth. You know, you can't.
And I'll tell you what. When I look at Lynn Wood, I picture myself in one of his dirty little lawsuits, and I'm going all Jack Nicholson on him, you know. You can't handle the truth.
Well, you're right. He can't, and that's why he will stay away, because the truth,
yep. So,
the
you
truth
know,
hurts
hey,
him.
Lynn, if you're out there listening to this, I've been through stuff that would make the devil shake in his boots. So don't think for a minute that you're going to make me nervous, okay?
Yeah, I'm sure I would assume he knows that already, so that's good to know. Well, and that's just the thing.
Anybody wants to take me on, hey, roll the dice and take your chances, but you're not going to find anything.
Well, the thing is, you can't sue for the truth. And that's the other great thing about the Internet is you can't hide things anymore like you could before. This case happened right on the brink of the Internet exploding. And had it been happening at an earlier time, we wouldn't know one-tenth of the things we know now, but the Internet has been able to bring it all out. Well, Dave, I'm glad you finally wrote your book. I would encourage everybody to pick it up, especially if you're not really familiar with the case. This book will kind of put it all in perspective for you. An Angel Betrayed, How Wealth, Power, and Corruption Destroyed the JonBenet Ramsey Murder Investigation. Just go to Amazon.com and type in author David J. Hughes, and it will pop right up. Super Dave, thank you so much. I'm sure we'll see you
on
the forum.
Is there one other thing I could say?
Oh, please, go right ahead.
All right. Right before I came on, you had on Mark Class, and he's a man, he's just like his name, all class.
Yes, he is.
I have nothing but respect for him, and I will say this. I plan to donate a good portion of my book's revenues to worthy organizations like his. So
oh, that'd
that's
be great.
One more reason for people to pick it up. But if I can look back, you know, 30 years from now and think that I've done even a fraction of what he's done for children in this country and around the world, I can die a happy man.
There you go. Well, you're doing it, my dear. If you donate those funds, that's really what they need, because they know what needs to be done. They just need the money to do it. So that will definitely be a welcome donation, I'm sure. So, okay, Super Dave, we'll see you on the forums, right?
You betcha.
Okay, everybody get that book. Thanks a lot for calling in, Dave. I do appreciate it.
Hey, glad to do it.
Okay, take care. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Super Dave, everybody. Super Dave. I feel like he should wear a cape wherever he goes. I don't know why. Okay, guess what? We have come to the end of another fabulous true crime show, Trisha's True Crime Radio. Now, do not forget this, okay? Trisha's True Crime Radio. Everybody on here, the opinions expressed on this show are those of the hosts and the guests. Now, Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuths.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. And True Crime Radio is brought to you by the incredible woman who formed the Doris Day Foundation. Actually, it's brought to you by the Doris Day Foundation. DorisDayFoundation.org. If you want to help homeless pets, Doris Day Foundation is the way to do it. They are a 501(c) charity, and like we said earlier, all I need is a little money to get the work done for those homeless animals, because Let's face it, the animals and kids, they're all the true innocents, and let's help them any way we can. Okay? Okay, there was one other thing I was going to say. Oh, yes. So don't forget my Thursday show. It is iHeartRadio's Extreme Talk. It's if you go to iHeartRadio, it's really hard to find, and I don't know why they've made it so difficult. But if you go to iHeartRadio and look for Extreme Talk, at that link on Extreme Talk Radio on iHeart, Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, that's when I appear on that link. So we'll have a great, I have a great show coming up Thursday. I'm just getting it all lined up. You'll love it. Going to be good. So we'll see you on the forums and on the radio next week. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everyone.